Yo Maxayira, my friends. Yo Maxayira. You know what that means? I don't know what that means. That is what how you say yo, what's up in Somali. And I know none of y'all speak Somali. And maybe one of you does. If one of you guys speaks Somali, like, correct me right now on how bad that was. But I was like, okay, like, I don't know. I wanted to say, like, yo, in a different language, and I didn't know what to choose. So I went on Google Translate. I scrolled, and I found Somali. So, yo, Maxayira, friends. What's up? Welcome back. We're back for another week of Shifting Gears. If you are here last week was our best performing video ever. Thank you for being there. Thank you for generating discussion. It appears we missed a few things, which is pretty typical, but also, like, kind of expected, given how, like, difficult these lists are to kind of contrast and stuff. And, man, if you think that was hard and inaccurate, wait till you hear this week. This is, dude, we had one guy last week tell us to stop, like, ripping our bong or something in the comments. I was dying. He's like, you guys have no idea what you're doing. Stop ripping. Get off your bong. And I was like, oh, my God. YouTube warriors are just built different, man. So
that's crazy.
Hopefully we put down our bong this week, apparently, and we get this all right. So,
yeah, so, I mean, it's an imperfect science, right? Like, even this week when we did our list, like, some of us had the cards in number one that other people didn't even have on their list. So it's just there's so many cards, so many decks. So we do our best, but we like when you guys, like, rip on us in the comments, like, let us know what we miss. I think some people gave some very good arguments for why Gardevoir should have been number one. And after reading them, I think I agree. People rightfully called out Matt and Anil for not putting Darkrai in their top 10.
Yeah.
we like it. Like, we just do the best with the information, like, we have and our thoughts and, like, the games we've played. But that's why we love, like, having, like, so many people watch it, so then we can have really good discussions on it. So definitely comment this week. Roast us again. Tell us why our list is horrible. So.
Honestly, I like when we get toasted. It's kind of funny. Like, it is. Reading how pissed off people are is amazing. So this week we're back with Matt again. By the way, I don't know if you guys noticed.
Yeah,
that.
What's
He's
up,
there
everybody?
On the right side of your screen. He is there. I promise. Matty's back. He gave us a peace sign. Did you give us a peace sign this week? I wasn't even looking. I was too busy speaking Somali.
There it is. I gave the thumbs up.
Welcome back. So this week we are going to be doing a top 10 cards of all time.
Pokemon cards of all time. Just Pokemon.
Yeah, not trainers, not energies. Like, you get my drift. We tried to make this list as diverse as possible. But with that being said, we try to, like, not make every single slot a support Pokemon, which is what this would be if we were doing, like, a real, like, top 10 most impactful, most played, highest percentage of decks Pokemon. That's what it would look like. So we're kind of switching it up. We have a top 10. We had about, like, combined between the three of us, like, 40 to 50 cards that we all thought had a chance at top 10. And, like, this game's been on for, what, like, 28, 29 years now, like, of printing cards. Actually, no, you started in, what, 98?
96, or maybe 98. Well, 96 was a video game. I think it might have been 98 or 99 for the cards.
Something like that.
Well, I think 99 was base set.
Okay. Yeah. I think in the West, I think 99 was the base set. So, yeah. Like
25 years of this game.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's the 25th year anniversary.
Yeah, a lot of Pokemon cards to go through, and we have a lot of good ones, but there are a lot that, I don't know, maybe didn't make the cut. People might think, like, hey, how did this not make the cut? Like, I'll tell you right now, like, Dedenne GX didn't make our list or our honorable mentions, and some people might be like, what? That's crazy.
I didn't
crazy.
Even say that one, to be honest.
No?
I did. I was like, there's better options, because there were other Pokemon that, yeah. We'll get into it, but yeah, same here.
So, given that, there's a lot of different Pokemon. We'd love to hear your top 10 before we even start. Write your top 10 below and then contrast it to after the video there. But let's just get right into it. We got a lot to cover today.
Before we get into it, let's do our methodology. So there's a couple things I want to call out.
Yeah, sorry.
We're ranking cards relative to their era. So I think in a vacuum, some cards would be, like, stronger. Like, if you just teleported a card to different eras, like, it would do really well. But it's relative to its era. So, for example, like, Lumineon V is, like, a good card, but, like, there was, like, a Lapras back in, like, Ruby Sapphire with the same ability that didn't see as much play. So obviously a non-two prizer is better, but, like, I'd argue that Lumineon's on our list, but I'd argue, like, it's a better card because it sees more play. So that's kind of how we're doing it. It's relative to its era, how good it was. And then other than that, like, yeah, like Anil said, we tried to pick one card at least from each generation of the game. So there's some good diversity on the list, but yeah, Anil, let's get into it. Let's start with those honorable mentions.
Okay, so honorable mentions. This might be a shock to some people, this first one, that it's not even in the top 10, but Arceus V-Star is our first honorable mention. Matt, I'll let you take this one away as the arc designator in this group.
All right, yeah. So Arceus V-Star probably is the best V Pokemon in its era. There is another one that we did consider, but Arceus definitely is, in our opinion, one of the best because it's just such a strong card. It's got double computer search as an ability. It's got an attack that can power anything up, basically any V Pokemon up anyways. But the card itself also is very dominant. It saw a lot of play throughout its run so far. It won Worlds. It won NEIC. It won multiple regional championships. It is one of the most like winning cards of its like this era. So it definitely, I think, had to make the list. It's still a very new card, and it hasn't even like rotated yet. It's still that new. But we definitely wanted to give it some kind of mention here. We didn't think it would quite make the list, but definitely, like, looking back, maybe in a couple of years from now, if we were to redo this list, there's a world where maybe Arceus V-Star does make the list, because it is such a strong and powerful card.
Yeah. Karen, you got any thoughts about Arceus and why you don't like it?
Yeah, I don't know. I personally like didn't like Arceus playing it, just because I don't know. It feels like average, but no, I agree. Its V-Star power is insane. It's like computer search twice with no downside. I guess my only argument against Arceus is the opportunity cost. Like, you have to forgo playing another V-Star power, which is basically just like saying you have to play another deck, which is like any of these cards. But it won Worlds as well, and I think the thing about Arceus that makes it such a great card is it's a colorless Pokemon, so you can play it with anything, and its attack like powers up any type of Pokemon. So I just think that flexibility combined with the V-Star power, just it's just a fantastic card.
And like my one gripe, we already talked about it, but my one gripe to the whole like opportunity cost thing is that like computer search also made you have like lose that opportunity cost of like playing another ace spec kind of thing. So like I 100% get what you're saying, but I think it does go both ways. I think I think Arceus is very good because in and itself it's an engine, right? It's an engine and an attacker, and you'll see that as like a common trend a little bit on this list. Like if you're your own engine and your own attacker, like you generally did better on this list.
Yeah,
and we'll see that as time goes on. But Arceus for me as well like really stood out, and I think like to this day Arceus would still be doing well if V Pokemon were being printed and it wasn't EX now, just because of the card text saying like you can only accelerate to V's kind of gatekeeps it. And like hey, we might be talking in a couple weeks and Arceus might have won another IC, right? Like you don't know. So
it's possible
never know with that card. On to the next honorable mention. This one is one that I considered heavily in my list. I don't know how I feel about it still to this moment, but we have Pidgeot from Fire Red Leaf Green. Fantastic ability. Anyone who plays now will be very familiar with it. It is a direct reprint of Pidgeot EX. Well, the ability is at least. Very consistent card. Just in that era, like you, like Kieran's going to touch on in a sec, but you either played this or you played counters to this. So Kieran, take it away.
Yeah, so I think I had this probably the highest out of all of us. I just think the card in general is, like, debatably one of the best support Pokemon ever, like, abilities ever. Like, getting any card from your deck is, like, computer search every turn. If you ever play that format, like Anil's alluding to, like, you either play Pidgeot in your deck or you play, like, some of the cards that counter it. So, like, some people were playing, like, Lunatone and Solrock together because their ability, when you had both in play, would shut off colorless abilities. Some people played a stadium called Battle Frontier that shut off colorless abilities. So, like, Pokemon printed cards, like, directly to counter this. So I just think that's like crazy. Like it's kind of like a support Pokemon that warped the meta. Like imagine devoting two bench spots just to counter like one Pokemon. That's kind of crazy to me. So, I think it definitely could have made the top 10, but it's just a hard list to crack. But Pidgeot's probably one of the most iconic cards from the Ruby Sapphire era and one of the most iconic support Pokemon ever. And you can see that it got printed as a two prizer in this format and it still sees play in a tier one deck. So
yeah. Pidgeot definitely could, like there's so many support Pokemon to choose from. Like, it was kind of hard to come up with, like, the best support Pokemon for this list, but Pidgeot definitely is, like, a good runner-up, I think, that, you know, easily could have made the list, but there's just so many other support Pokemon to choose from that it was kind of hard.
Yeah, 100%. I think that was part of our criteria, too. Like, we don't want to put too many support Pokemon. Obviously, we know Pidgeot was very instrumental in its era, so
That's
why I got an honorable mention. Next one is Spiritomb from Arceus, from Platinum Arceus, sorry. Great card, great setup card. Did a lot in terms of item lock, in terms of slowing your opponent down, also accelerated your setup, and honestly at the end of the day wasn't a huge liability. A lot of decks were okay with losing that first prize, especially since you're putting a damage counter on yourself every turn. But just kind of like ensured that you get set up, and I think the decks you can kind of see the most in now are like Gardevoir and Torterra Flygon, like decks like that really have a lot of moving pieces. This is the one card that kind of like enabled those strategies. So that's why it made my honorable mentions. Matt, you got some thoughts on that. I'll let you take it away first.
Yeah, I had it on like my honorable mentions too. It is a very like strong setup card. Its ability is literally item lock on a basic when it's in the active, which is ridiculous. And yeah, it was a very good card for the time. It, you know, slowed the game down. It allowed you to set up your evolving decks, because like back then when Spirit Tomb was legal, the meta was a little bit more aggressive towards some of these evolving decks with some of like the SPs and stuff. So it was nice to have, you know, Spirit Tomb around to slow the game down so you could set up your Pokemon and evolve them. If this card came out today, I'm pretty sure it would still see quite a bit of play because it's just such a good card. I mean, that ability alone is pretty ridiculous. I don't think the card was like super duper impactful to the point where it definitely could have made the list though. But once again, it's a good honorable mention. It saw a good amount of play. It impacted the game, and it's definitely just a very strong card, like just looking at it on face value. It's just a very good card.
Yeah. I don't know. I think I kind of disagree. I think it definitely could have made the list. I had it at 11, so I didn't put it on my list. But I think the thing with Spirit Tomb that was so good was, I think without that card, I think 2010 would be a way worse format. I think it kept the aggressive decks in check. Because not only did it have like the item lock aspect to slow those decks down, but you're evolving your Pokemon. So you can play a slow game. It only had 60 HP, so like it was very balanced. Like if you were able to attack it, you could knock it out. And I think it enabled some cool strategies too. Like Gengar, for example, had an attack that would bring it back to the bench. You can put up Spirit Tomb. I think it saw play in like a variety of decks, so I like that. It was a very versatile card. And yeah, I just think its ability like is debatably the best ability ever. Like that would see, I know we're not supposed to rank it like this, but that would see play like in any era ever. Just I think it'd be too toxic in a lot, especially in modern day Pokemon where items are way more important. And it saw play in Gardevoir, it saw play in Gengar, it saw play in like, you know, saying Torterra, it saw play in any deck that evolved, to be honest, like it saw play. So to me, it was like one of the best support Pokemon. It was also like a pseudo lock Pokemon. So to me, very good card, just off
the top. Well, the way I think of it now, like when I contrast it to like what I see play now, is like imagine TM Evo said, this attack is free, item lock your opponent, and search your deck for one evolution but when I evolve it. It would be absolutely cracked. Like everybody would play it all the time. And that's what Spirit Tomb was. So I think, yeah, you're right. I think every single era, almost maybe outside of like tag team era and like those like huge big basics formats, it's probably like a really, really good card. So
yeah.
Spirit Tomb. Spirit Tomb is one of those cards also that has like a big nostalgia feature for me. I remember I needed a Spirit Tomb for one of my decks and like I forget who I was with, but they didn't want to buy me Pokemon cards. And at that time there was a Pokemon magazine that came with a pack of Arceus if you bought it. And I was like, yeah, I'm just going to buy the magazine, fully knowing there was an Arceus pack inside. And I ripped reverse Spirit Tomb, rare Spirit Tomb. Nice. And I was all set for the rest. Nice. So that's a personal one for me. I missed that magazine, by the way. They used to have this like Pokemon magazine. It was
Beckett?
Really sick. And it came with packs. Yeah.
But they gotta bring that back. I love Beckett, bro.
So sick.
Like,
so sick.
The unofficial, it was like an unofficial magazine. I'm sure they got like a season desist or something eventually. I don't know. But I, as a kid, I used to like, read that like every month.
Well, it was useful because it had, like, price guides in it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The internet did not have price guides.
It was a lot different back then, yeah. That was, like, one of our ways to get information, which is crazy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Perfect. All right, on to the next one. We have Genesect V. V Pokemon, this made my top 10 easily. In my opinion, one of the strongest draw support Pokemon in the game ever. I would argue that it's better than some of the, like, draw Pokemon on our list here. And it also has an attack that enabled Mew to be really, really good. I think, obviously, there's a little bit of a restriction holding it back in the sense that it only works with fusion Pokemon. And I think that's why it's not on our list. But to me, like ability-wise and attack-wise, it's way up there for me. So, Kieran, I don't know if you want to give your thoughts first here.
Yeah, I think Genesect is the strongest draw engine a deck has ever had. I don't think that's debatable. Yeah. It's basically Shaman's ability every turn once you have a full board. Yeah. I think the only reason I didn't top 10 it is, like, it's kind of reliant on the cards that you can play with it. It's, like, obviously it has Mew, so it's good. But it's not, like, as versatile. Like, it's limited to one archetype. So that's kind of why I kept it off. But obviously, like, as an engine in a specific deck, I think it's one of the strongest Pokemon ever.
Yeah, it's interesting because it is kind of like the cards around it are what helped make it so good, right? You could only play a fusion Pokemon, you had Mew, you had all like the other fusion cards. And I think one of the other big things with Genesect is Battle VIP Pass was so good with it because it allowed you to like easily get to like a 6 Pokemon board really quickly. Instead of having to rely on like manually drawing into them with like Nest Ball or Ultra Ball, you can, you know, just play a Battle VIP and get like 2 Genesects in play and then play an Ultra Ball, thin your hand down. A lot of the cards around it are what helped make it so good, but it is just obviously one of the best abilities we've ever seen. Just it's such a good ability. You can see like most of your deck over the course of like two turns. It's a very good card, and it was close to making the list, but yeah, definitely is, I think, a good honorable mention pick for sure.
Yeah, 100%. Our next one is Blast from the Past a little bit. So this card is a card that I think might be the strongest ability, one of the top five strongest abilities of all time. This is Dusknoir from Diamond and Pearl. I believe it was called, well, it wasn't Sinister Hand.
It's called
Hard
Feelings or something? Or not the attack.
It was Dark.
No, that was the attack.
Dark Palm.
So it's on your screen right now. You guys can look at it. But this ability was just absolutely insane, like mind-blowing. And in the formats where Broken Time Space existed, in the formats where Spear Team existed, and you can get this up kind of unexpectedly, very, very fast, it was devastating. Like, it's a different story if it's like Collapse Stadium or if it's like Parallel City, where it's like your opponent discards whatever they want off their bench. But this says, hey, you discard what you want off your opponent's bench. So you gust your opponent, put their attacker to the bench, whatever, Dark Palm back in the deck, goodbye, peace. So this one for me was close to the top 10. The only reason it didn't make the top 10 is just because, like, obviously it's hard to get out. It's not a basic like some of these other Pokemon. It's a stage 2 that was a 101 line at most in most decks. So that's what kind of held it back for me. But it is a very, very strong ability. Matt, if you want to give us your thoughts on that.
Yeah, it's definitely like a broken ability, like looking at it. Because, yeah, like Collapse Stadium, you play it down. Your opponent chooses what to get rid of. This getting to choose any Pokemon is like actually insane. Like, imagine if we had this ability today. And you're playing against like Charizard, and they like fill their bench up. You just like, oh, put the Pidgeot back in the deck, and it's like, all right, it's a very strong card. But yeah, like you said, it was a stage 2 Pokemon, so it was a bit harder to get out. And also, you know, you could also play around it if you had knowledge your opponent played it. You can also play around it, but if you obviously like don't play around it, it's just a very dirty card. Definitely is an interesting ability, but we say this all the time in this video, but like definitely one of the most like broken abilities. Like when you look at it, you're kind of just like, how did they get away with like an ability this good in the game?
Yeah, I think the cool thing about Dusknoir is back then is like you didn't know if your opponent played Dusknoir, so like any deck that played Garcandy could play Dusknoir. So like you either had to like commit to playing around it, or you just had to be like, I hope they don't play it. And it's really punishing if they play it. And like, let's say you play Dusknoir and like your opponent just keeps their bench at 3 all game, like that's still a win for you. Like you basically like took away 2 bench spots for them. So I think it's a really cool card because it forced people to play differently, and just the threat of Dusknoir like forced people to play differently. So I think I was just gonna say my finishing thoughts. I think also back then it's like deck lists were like less known. So like that was like a huge advantage if you're like people just didn't know what you played. Nowadays I feel like it would leak really fast, like people go on stream or like whatever, like you would know. But back then, like you could even go to Top Cut and like people wouldn't know if like you were playing Dusknoir or not. So
yeah, I guess one thing I wanted to mention too with Dusknoir is back then Rare Candy was like ruled differently. So you could bench Duskull and evolve it on the turn, so you can't just like bench Duskull a turn in advance and make your opponent like be like, oh, you play Dusknoir. Like, you can play it down at any point in the game as long as you have Rare Candy, Duskull, Dusknoir in hand, because of Rare Candy allowing you to evolve the turn you benched a Pokemon, which I think also added to how good this card was, because you can't just like preemptively bench a Duskull in preparation for Dusknoir like you can, like you have to do now. Like, back then, you could just have benched it and just immediately evolved it.
There was also a Duskull at the time with a held item that I think allowed you to evolve it the turn of.
It was like the shiny Duskull, right?
I think it was the regular one with Reaper Cloth. I thought it was a regular one.
Oh, yeah. The shiny one had the attack, I think, that didn't cost energy.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking at it now.
We'll have it on the screen now. We'll like, post-game us will know the answer to this. But
optimal Duskull.
The optimal Duskull. So you can go to Duskull, or Dusclops right away, sorry. And you could also go to Dusknoir if you had a Rare Candy, just because of the way it was ruled. And, like, that was that's a whole other topic for another day. But, like, turn on Rare Candy is just ridiculous. Okay. Last one here, last honorable mention is, and this one is another one that I was surprised didn't make the list. We have Darkrai EX from Dark Explorers. I'll leave my thoughts to last. Kieran, go ahead.
I mean, Darkrai is just like such a strong Pokemon. I think that and another card we'll talk about, like, just power crept the game to like probably the biggest power creep we've ever seen. This card was, when it came out, everywhere. I think we mentioned last week, like 7 of 8 spots in the world's top 8, 12 of 16, I think, in top 16. It won worlds back-to-back years. So Night Spear was just a super strong attack. 90 and 30 on the bench. That seems weak nowadays, but back then, like, that was, like, insane on a basic. It was a really fast deck. Like, you could attack turn 1. And I think the cool thing about Darkrai 2 was you could use it as like a support Pokemon in like other decks. So Dark Cloak is a fantastic ability. Like any Pokemon has a Dark Energy as Free Retreat. So we saw like 2012, the year came out, a Kling Klang deck won Nationals, US Nationals. So kind of like an IC level tournament. And Darkrai wasn't really an attacker in that deck. It was literally just used for its ability to help things retreat. We saw tons of decks over the year just include Darkrai, mainly those like Rainbow Energy type decks. So I thought that was cool that it was like it's a main attacker, which it was really strong at, and it won Worlds in that capacity, but it also kind of transitioned to being a support Pokemon as well. So very few Pokemon have that level of versatility as like a main Pokemon than a support Pokemon in other decks. So to me, it's just like a really great card.
Yeah, y'all let us know about like how we missed putting Darkrai on the list last week, because we looked at it and we're like, okay, yeah, Darkrai probably should have made the top 10. Like that deck was like uber dominant. But yeah, Darkrai definitely one of the best EX cards. Good ability, good attack. There was also a lot of ways it was played during its heyday. There was like Sableye, Garbodor, Terrakion. You know, you paired it with like Mewtwo and stuff. Like Darkrai saw a lot of play in a ton of different archetypes. And then like you said, it became a support Pokemon for these more Rainbow Energy toolbox style decks. And I feel like Darkrai, I don't know if we like saw like the Dark Cloak ability in the past, but it feels like that ability, like, kind of, they keep reprinting that ability over and over again. We saw with, like, Zeraora GX and stuff, so. Darkrai is also, like, a very influential card, I feel like, for, like, the future of the game.
Yeah, super cool card. I mean, like, just the ability of the card and the numbers it hit were so perfect at the time, combined with its health. Like, there was a lot of plays where, like, you guys remember this, like, when you go 140-30 using, like, Dark Claw, Verbank, and Laser. And then against, like, Plasma, you're taking four prizes in two turns, and that's kind of insane. Ridiculous. So I think the numbers it hit were, like, really, really convenient for it at the time. Like, you might look at it now and be like, this is whatever, but it was, like, to me, it was a similar concept to Zoroark GX in the sense that, like, Zoroark was always two-shotting other Zoroarks, and Darkrai was always two-shotting other Darkrais, but Darkrai also had the possibility of doing more than just that, right? Like, yeah, the 140-30 was huge, and, like, you kind of, like, interchange between those two things, and Catcher was a thing, so you could bring that up immediately. You didn't have to worry about Boss. Like, it was just Gust on an item. So I think, like, a lot of things in that format favored Darkrai, and, like, the card at our number 10 also favored Darkrai a lot, as well as Sableye with Junk Hunt, and, like, there's just so many different things going for that card that I thought, when it came out, like, obviously it was revolutionary. It was an $80 card, and none of us could afford it, so...
It was expensive.
It was good. Yeah, and it pushed another card in the format to being good. It pushed Terrakion from Noble Victories to being a good card, because otherwise, without that, like, nobody cares about Terrakion. But Terrakion was... I think it was in the deck that won Worlds that year, too.
Was it Darkrai Terrakion?
It was Darkrai, Terrakion, Mewtwo, like... With Mewtwo, like I think he played Prism Energy. I think he might have, honestly. His deck was called...
There was one Prism. Fighting two Prisms, I think.
Yeah, I think just a little note, Neil. Terrakion was good before Darkrai because Eels was a very popular deck, but Darkrai pushed, like, Terrakion to be included in almost half the decks.
Like, it was almost mandatory to, like, almost have that type of card in your deck, basically.
Yeah, because Terrakion basically only countered Raikou EX at the time, which also came out with Darkrai.
No, it didn't counter Raikou. It countered Zekrom.
Zekrom, yeah. I guess it would have been good against Raikou, obviously.
No, like the best deck. Zekrom. The best deck before Darkrai came out was Mewtwo with Electric, and like you would play like Bolt Strike Zekrom. So then like you would play Terrakion to counter that, and Terrakion was actually kind of decent into Mewtwo because you only needed two energy.
And then it hit. Fair. Yeah.
There was one person who won. He won a state championships. I can't remember his name. I think his last name was Hill. I think. And he played, I'm not kidding, just four Terrakion and then a bunch of EXP shares and like items.
Oh, I remember that.
So he won states with that card. So
that was after Darkrai, though, wasn't it?
No, it was before Darkrai.
Before Darkrai. Which is even crazier, you think about it. I didn't know that, actually.
Yeah, because in my mind, like when I think of that era, I think of Mewtwo Eels being like the most prominent thing, right? And like Zekrom EX was a one of, and then I think there's two Bolt Strike Zekroms, but it makes sense because like. You think about it now and you're like, oh, 130, whatever, like everything eats that. But I guess at that point, you kind of need to hit weakness or something to eat that one up.
Yeah, we'll talk about it later, like when we get to Mewtwo. But like Darkrai also completely forced Eels out of the format. It went from best deck to like, it won seniors, but it didn't really perform in Masters. It like kind of got relegated to tier two.
It just like completely fell off.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
The stupid 30 HP Tynamo, man. all right, at number 10. Darkrai's best friend towards his later years, Garbodor from Dark Explorers, and I believe there's another one from Breakpoint. Same card functionally. I believe the attack was a little bit different. Yeah, that's why it wasn't a direct reprint.
Yeah. But we'll count it.
But it was like essentially the same thing. Yeah.
If you're attacking with Garbodor, you're losing. So.
Yeah, pretty much.
Hey, Junk Hunt was good though on Trubby.
Oh yeah, garbage collection. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We had an optimal Trubbish, right?
Yeah, we had an optimal Trubbish. So we'll have that on the screen. Trubby's a dear card to Kieran and I. That was one of our first like big tournament runs. I remember we were playing Junk Hunt Trubby or whatever. What's it called? Garbage Collecting?
I think Garbage Collecting, yeah.
Great card.
Like that, yeah.
So, yeah, Garbodor went through its phases. There were times where it wasn't as good and then times where it really kind of blew up. Obviously, with a card like that, it's very situational to what's around and what's good at the time. Kind of similar to like a Path kind of thing, except Path is obviously a bit more versatile than Garbodor was. Garbodor got a huge buff when Floatstone came out. Before that, we're putting like rescue scarves on it and like big EXP cape shares. Like it was, it was jank or us before Floatstone came out. And then when Floatstone came out, you have like this no longer three retreat liability sitting on your bench at all times in a format where Catcher was a thing. So, Kieran, take us through Garbodor real quick.
Yeah, I think Garbodor, from the time it was printed to the time it left Standard, was always like a threat in the meta. Like you always had to build your deck with Garbodor in mind. So originally, you had to include Tool Scrapper in your deck. Towards the later years, you had to put Field Blower in your deck. I think it was a really good card for healthy metagames. Like, it kept a lot of decks in check. Like, you had to respect Garbodor, because normally when you put Garbodor in your deck, like, your strategy had to be a little weaker since you're not relying on abilities. And, like, also just, like, I feel like N plus Garbodor was, like, just a combo that was, like, infamous. It was kind of similar to, like, now going Roxanne Path with Giratina. You always had a chance in a game if you had, like, Garbotoxin plus a way to disrupt. It also won the World Championships in 2018, which was, like, basically, like, 5 years after, like, the original iteration came out. So the staying power was, like, just crazy. I remember when, like, Garbodor got reprinted, like, everyone was, like, not again. Or, like, some people were excited if you played the card. So I just think Ability Lock is... I mean, if you look at this list of Pokemon, I think almost every Pokemon we've picked has an ability. Shutting off abilities is good. I considered Muk from Fossil because it just has Garbotoxin without a tool, but relative to its era, like back then, like the powers weren't as prevalent. So, Garbotoxin, very good.
Yeah, I mean, Garbotoxin is, in my opinion, one of the best lock abilities we've ever seen. I mean, we have like item locks that have been pretty good, but just being able to like lock abilities in general is just so good. And yeah, it depends really on like what decks are popular at the time. Like when Garbodor, you know, got reprinted, there was a lot of good abilities. And then obviously stuff like Zoark GX started to abuse it. And one thing that made Garbodor like kind of fair and balanced was that there were ways to counter it. Like you could play Field Blower, you could play Tool Scrapper. Like there were ways you can just, you know, directly counter it. You didn't just like automatically lose the game if your opponent Garbotoxined you. Unless you, for whatever reason, weren't playing any like tool removal. And that is one thing too to note is like, a lot of decks, like most decks, had to play at least one copy of tool removal because Garbodor was just that good. And I feel like if any deck forces a deck to have to play like an immediate response to it, no matter what, it's like that directly like makes it a good card. But yeah, Garbotoxin's very good. There were a lot of good Garbodor cards. Yep. And I think Garbotoxin is the like basic epitome of like all the good Garbodors. It's such a good card. And I feel like even today, if Garbotoxin got reprinted, it would see a lot of play. 100%. And I feel like there's been a lot of discussion 100%. On like, there's been a lot of discussion too about like, this should come back because Path to the Peak is rotating and there's a lot of abilities in the format right now that are a little too out of control, I feel like. So having Garbotoxin would be nice in our current format. That's like kind of here, near or there. But I really do think Garbodor is just an ability that, yeah, I don't know. It's just, it's really good. And having it reprinted would make the format a lot better.
Yeah,
that's what I was gonna say. I think we're certainly due for a reprint on the horizon of some sort of item or ability lock card.
Yeah,
Pokemon does this thing where sometimes they like baby random jank Pokemon and just make all of their cards good. So like you've seen it with Garbodor, we've seen it with like Malamar. Yeah. Like they're like Sableye. Random like jank Pokemon, Sableye, that like generally I think are towards the more unlikable side. That I guess Pokemon uses as a hey, might as well boost this up, right? Like, who the hell cared about Trubbish and Garbodor before Garbotoxin? Like, if you asked me that today and those cards weren't a thing, I'd barely know they were Pokemon. Like, the next one, I'll tell you the next one. It's going to be Bruxish. What the hell is a Bruxish?
That might be, like, the worst Pokemon of all time. I'm not going to lie.
Bruxish or Enamorous are, like, up there for sure.
I was going to say Enamorous.
Oh, yeah, Enamorous is a bad one, too.
One of my, like, favorite jank Pokemon that I think is really underrated is Alomomola.
Alomomola?
Alomomola. Yeah, that one's... Bro, that's, like, basically, like, Lovedisc and Bruxish. Like, it's, like, twin cousin.
Yeah, so I'm just saying, if you see, like, a Spiritomb reprint on an Alomomola, you heard it first here. That is all.
I think that's one thing I love about the card game, is it finds a way to make Pokemon that, like, no one would care about or, like, we don't like, and just make them into, like, favorites. Like Klingklang, for example, is a Pokemon like I did not care about at all when it came out. Like now it's one of my favorites. It's the name of our podcast. Yeah. So
Yeah, like there are some Pokemon that I think are deserved for some love. Like some Pokemon that I think in the history of the TCG have never really had like great cards. Like one that pops to my mind early is Corsola. I don't think there's ever been like a good Corsola. Like that's a cool Pokemon you can kind of jump into, and like this is a topic for another day, but there is definitely I definitely agree with you. Like even when they reprinted the baby Pokemon and they made like Pichu and Cleffa like the strongest Pokemon in the format, like it goes to show like, all right, we're they have an agenda. They have an agenda. They're hitting their agenda. So that is our number 10, and what I just said accidentally segues perfectly into number 9, which is Cleffa. I didn't even mean to do that. That was sick.
Yeah.
So this is Cleffa. I don't remember what set this was from. Was it Revelation? Might have been Revelation.
This one, one of the Neo sets.
Neo Genesis.
Yeah, it might have been Genesis. Genesis? Yeah, okay. I have one on my wall. I'm like looking at it right now, but I couldn't see the set symbol. So Neo Genesis, Cleffa. The ultimate setup support Pokemon. Very, very good early game Pokemon. Most of the lists played four. I think the only lists at that time that weren't playing Cleffa were kind of just faster and didn't really care about it, but great crutch. It was also reprinted in Heart Gold Soul Silver. It was a little bit different Heart Gold Soul Silver, I believe, but
yeah, it was still good, but it was different. Yeah.
Very similar. Very, very similar. So the whole baby Pokemon concept, I think, well, now that I think about it, I guess like the Neo sets like represented Gold and Silver, and then Heart Gold Soul Silver were just the reprints of those Neo sets. So I guess the Pokemon TCG does do like these like little cycles over time, and maybe like when these like Gen 6 remakes come out with like Legends ZA, whatever the hell it's called, you might see like some like Kalos cards come back and be good again. So I hope you guys are ready for Greninja break too.
Yeah, that'd be kind of sick. Well, we're getting Greninja EX, bro. We're on the it's on the brink of happening.
That card looks good. Next week we're gonna sit down and talk about all the post rotation stuff. But okay, thoughts on Cleffa. I don't remember who I delegated first to last. So Kieran, here you go.
Okay,
go nuts.
Yeah. So Cleffa, obviously, just the ability to shuffle and draw, fantastic. Like it's basically like you're not gonna brick. Like you can play your hand out, set up, and then do it. But the thing that pushed Cleffa over the edge was the baby rule. And the baby rule was whenever you try and attack a baby, like you have to flip a coin. If you don't get heads, you can't attack it. So just a 50% chance to block attacks, I think was really good. And just to speak of why the Neo Cleffa is way better than the Heart Gold Soul Silver Cleffa. So the Heart Gold iteration of the baby Pokemon, like their attacks would put them to sleep. And if they were asleep, they couldn't get attacked. So if it woke up, like your opponent would know they could just attack it. Like they had perfect knowledge. But back then, like you don't know if you're going to take a knockout until you go for it. You had to flip. So I thought that is why that's super good. So let's say you attack with like Cleffa four times during a game. Like on average, you probably save yourself like two prize cards or something, which is just good. And like, yeah, like you basically would just like be able to sit back. Decks were a little bit slower back then. Like you can get your set optimal setup. And I think it's nice because both players could kind of work towards their optimal setup. And then once you're ready to get rid of Cleffa, you can get rid of Cleffa and like start playing the game. Yeah, just if you look, like I was just going through Jason's blog last night, like when I was doing research for this video, and like all his lists four Cleffa, even the aggressive decks four Cleffa. So yeah, basically every deck was just playing four Cleffa back then. So
yeah, one of the best setup Pokemon. I think we have another one on this list, but Cleffa definitely is a very good card, and like I said, that ability is just really powerful. Obviously, you know, it was kind of a product of its time where, you know, decks were a bit slower. Same thing with the Heart Gold, Soul Silver Cleffa. The meta was a little bit slower back then. You could afford to sit back and eke a couple times to set up. I mean, nowadays, Cleffa probably wouldn't, you know, see much play. But honestly, it's just a very strong card. And it was very good back in the day. It was, like, mandatory in a lot of decks. Most decks played it. It's just a very good setup support Pokemon. I feel like it might be one of maybe the best like setup Pokemon, because obviously there's support Pokemon, there's draw engine Pokemon, and then there's Pokemon that let you set up, and Cleffa is one of the standouts in that category.
Yeah, 100%. I think there's definitely a case we made.
I want to shout out like a really toxic combo that existed back then. So there's a card called Lass. Anyone who goes back in time and you look at these like early item cards, you're like, what was Pokemon doing? So the card was both players reveal their hands, and you shuffle back all the trainer cards. So what you would do is, if your opponent didn't have Cleffa in play, you would just last, get rid of all their trainers, then you got to like use Cleffa and just get a new hand. So it was very good with disruption as well. And back then, there was tons That's of crazy. Disruption cards. That, and then once you get to the rocket sets, there was cards that like could snipe like three cards at once, snipe items. So yeah, very good.
Jeez.
I miss Cleffa. It was actually fun just saying eek over and over. And what was the other one? I think it was Playground on Pichu, like just in Heart Gold Soul Silver.
Yeah.
Tyrogue had one.
It was just fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, Tyrog sniped out the other babies. Like, it was just a good time, man. Yeah. It was just a lot of coin flips, a lot of junk. It was good. all right. Going a couple years into the future, now at number 8, we have Holland's Cast Form. This is a card that, at least for me, I know the boys didn't all have it as high as I did, but I thought this card was, like, insane. Like, when I look at it in the context of time and, like, the context of what it provides and, like, thinking about what it could provide at any era ever, double rainbow is insane. And it, like, and I think the thing that sticks out to me, too, is it's such, like, a unique Pokemon card. We've talked multiple times about how a lot of Pokemon get reprinted, a lot of abilities get reprinted, like, stuff gets recycled. This has never been recycled ever, never existed ever. Like, it was just a Pokemon that was also an energy, and, like, I remember when I went back and played this format for the first time, I was like, well, what does this even mean? Like, it didn't make any sense to me. And I think, like, a lot of people have a similar experience. If you go back and you play, like, 05, 06, you're like, this does not make any sense. So, there's a lot of different wordings back then. That era, in general, for some reason, had a lot of, like, weird wordings, a lot of weird interactions. It just seemed like they got bored, and they're just like, all right, let's just turn this whole thing on its head. So, Holland's Cast Form, fantastic card, included in, like, so many decks. It enabled a lot of decks. Like, it enabled, like, these random decks like LBS, even though we talked about last week, where it had, like, I think Lugia EX attacked for, like, fire, water, lightning, and you're like, all right, bet, Cast Form plus one water, I'm laughing. So, Matt, what are your thoughts on Holland's Cast Form? I know we didn't play that era as much, but, I mean, I'm sure we can see how good of a card it is.
Yeah, I'm not as familiar with this era, but, I mean, looking at the card, I mean, that's just a ridiculous ability. Being able to turn a Pokemon into an energy, let alone a double rainbow energy, is, like, absolutely absurd. Yeah, very good card. I mean, even looking at it, even, like, its own first attack probably was, like, kind of decent, too. But, yeah, this card definitely is a very good card. It's one of the most, like, unique cards, too. Being able to turn into an energy is kind of cool. Like, we've seen this on some cards with, like, there's, like, a Klefki that turns into a tool card, which was kind of cool. And that saw play in Zoroark. But this, like, being able to turn into an energy is, like, a whole different ballpark of craziness. Yeah, definitely a very strong card. Ridiculous. Like, it's not is it even an ability? It's more like an effect, right? Just kind of like an ancient trait, almost. Yeah. It's kind of cool. So, yeah, definitely a really strong card. And obviously, being able to turn to a double rainbow is really good. There's so many decks that would benefit greatly from having a two rainbow energy filled up in their attack cost right away. And I know, like, the whole, like, Holland engine was kind of insane. There was a lot of good Holland cards. I guess, Kieran, you want to kind of talk about some of those?
Yeah, I think one thing you guys haven't pointed out yet that I think made this card really good was its attack was Delta Draw. So for each Delta Pokemon you had in play, like, you draw a card, which was, like, insane for setting up back then. So a lot of decks that didn't play, like, Delta Pokemon, a lot of the basics had Delta versions. So, for example, Pidgeot isn't a Delta Pokemon, but there was, like, a Delta Pidgey. So, like, you would just play the Delta version of the basics just so you could include Cast Form as a draw engine. And the game was slower back then, so you could build up, like, massive hands. There was Rocket's Admin, like, N, to reset your hand, but, like, that was the main card that saw play. And, yeah, I just think it's really cool. Like, it enables, like, awesome deck building. Like, you can play Pokemon of different types in your deck because of this card. So if we ever made a list of, like, best design cards of all time, like, I might put this one at number one. I think it's such a great design card. It's good for support, for setup. It's good for, like, enabling different strategies. And it's just, like, such a unique card. Like, I think it's awesome.
Very unique, yeah.
Yeah, like, Matt, you mentioned, like, the Holland engine. Like, there's just, like, yeah, back then, like, a bunch. There's a couple other Pokemon that had, like, the ability to attach as energy, but they didn't count as two. There's all the supporters. So this is my personal favorite format, is the Ruby Sapphire Power Keeper format. So, if you guys ever, I can't recommend it enough to go try it out. You can play it on the TCG1 or something. You'll see how strong Cast Form is and how fun it is to play with.
Yeah. That format is very, very slow, but it's really intricate. It's a lot of fun. Like, you'll sit there and your games will take you like 35, 40 minutes most of the time.
Yeah.
But it's a lot of fun. And the one thing with Cast Form that I think was jokes to me, like, the first few times I looked at it, like, I'd, like, walk in on, like, people playing, like, Ruby Sapphire, and, like, I'd look at some guy with, like, a Cast Form attached to his Wailord, and I'm like, go home, buddy, you're drunk, like, what the hell is this? And I look at it, and I'm like, holy, this is
an energy. Yeah, it's got deeper context.
Yeah, like, what is going on? Why does this guy have three Pokemon attached to his Pokemon? Like, it doesn't make any sense. Yeah. But for full context, too, those Delta Pokemon that Kieran were talking about were similar to what Terras are now.
Yeah.
They were just Pokemon, like that Pidgey he mentioned was a lightning type, just for fun. Just because they're like, hey, let's just make chaos. So.
Yeah, they made some, like, lore in the card game, like, exclusive to the card game that the video game didn't have, where it's like, oh, there's, like, some random island where, like, the Pokemon, like, get this energy and they become different types. So, Yeah, it was interesting. There also, I was
very, very unique time.
Yeah, I was gonna call it. There's a Hollands Electrode that also counts as double rainbow, but Castform's just better because it has the attack. So if you played a deck that like didn't want the drawing, you would play the Electrode instead, so you don't start Castform. But most decks that you played Castform, like, you could take advantage of its draw effect.
Yeah, and I think it was Hollands Magnemite and Voltorb also.
Yeah, they count as one. So
yeah. So not too bad. All right, next on the list we have the fabled Tapu Lele GX. Hey, you know, this is a cool card. It was a lot of money when it came out. So much money. But it, like, you look back on it, and it doesn't have any like really viable weaknesses. I think the one thing that set this card apart from the other support Pokemon on this list was its lack of being a bench liability. Like, almost every single other support Pokemon on this list was a liability. It was a two-prize liability on your bench. Typically lower HP than what the rest of the format has. So, like, I mean, this one was no different. Like, obviously 170 wasn't the highest in a format with, like, 210s and stuff, but the drop-off wasn't as large as it is now. So, like, right now you think about, like, Squawk at 160. You think about Mew EX at 180, Fish at 170 versus, like, these, like, 300 HP monsters. Like, it is a big deal. And back then, what Lele provided was a support Pokemon, a crutch, but also a good attacker with Energy Drive, had the same attack as Mew 2EX, and also an ability to not stick out. Didn't have a weakness, I don't believe. No resistance, no weakness. One retreat cost. Can attack for a DCE. Like, the card was just fantastically designed, and that's why it's number 7, at least for me. I believe I delegated to Kieran last time, so Matt, go ahead.
Yeah, Tapu Lele is one of the most important cards, I think, of the modern era. It had a really good ability where, obviously, you get any supporter. It was so good that, like, every deck played, like, 3 to 4 of them. I'm pretty sure Tord played 4 Lele in one of his, like, Zoroark decks, which is crazy to think about. But yeah, like you said, it was a very good card because not only did it have a good ability, but it also had a good attack. There were so many games where you could literally just attack with Lele and win the game. Like, you could go attach to Lele, knock something out that you set up earlier on in the game, and the Lele just sit on your bench sometimes didn't matter because, like, okay, it, you know, nowadays you got Squawk ability, you got Mew in play, it's going to get boss KO'd. But back then, like, having a Lele in play wasn't that bad because as long as you had, like, double Colossus energy in your deck, you could always use it as an attacker. And it was, like, a good attacker. It has, you know, a very infamous Pokemon's attack that we're going to get into a bit later. The only downside with Lele, I guess, really was that it didn't hit for weakness. But honestly, like, that could have been relevant in, like, the Espeon GX format. But I do think that Lele is just a very fantastically designed card. It was a little squishy, but even back then, it wasn't as squishy as stuff are now. It didn't have a weakness. It was very crucial for setup decks because back then you could play a supporter going first, so you could just play Lele for Bridget and then Bridget set up your board, or you could Lele for like an N or a Lily or something and build up your hand, refresh your hand. But yeah, Lele, very, very strong card. There's a reason why Lumineon V is, you know, so played, because it's the same thing. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
also, sorry, I delegated to Matt 2 times in a row. No. Not on some Stephen A.
I think you delegated
thing.
To Kieran 2 times in a row, too, though.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, like, before that.
I'm just cutting off. I'm going to fix up, okay? I'm not all a dictator. Right. I'm going to fix up. I believe in equal shares. Okay, Kieran, go ahead.
I appreciate that. Yeah, so yeah. I think the first thing to point out that both of you guys alluded to is that it wasn't as much of a liability. And, like, I think anyone who plays now, you're like, oh, this, like, looks like Fish, like Lumineon. It has 170 HP. But back then, like, most decks actually couldn't do 170 in one hit very easily.
No.
Like, Zoroark GX, for example, was probably the best Pokemon back then, and it capped at, like, 120 without modifiers. So I think that was what made the card really good. Like, there's previous iterations, like, Jirachi GX, for example, had, like, 90 HP, and that card saw play. That's obviously a liability. So, yeah, to me, the biggest thing was that it wasn't just straight up, like, two-prize liability on your bench. Like, most of your attacking Pokemon, like, your main Pokemon, like, your basic GXs had, like, 180 HP. So that was good. I think back then, one of the reasons I actually really enjoyed the Sun and Moon format for the tag teams is most matchups were, like, 2 shots. Like, you couldn't one-shot stuff. So, like you guys said, like, you could, like, hit something early, like, with whatever, with Zoroark, for example. Then Lele could usually clean it up. Like, his attack was just, like, super solid. And, like, yeah, like, it's just, like, back then, like, there were setup supporters for the evolution decks. Like, it was mainly Bridget. So Lele would always help you get that. Later in the game, you get your N. It was just useful at all stages of the game. Like, I can't remember a single deck in that format that didn't play Lele. It was just, like, that versatile of a card. Perfectly well-designed, super balanced. It never felt unfair. So, yeah, to me, just a great card from design-wise, playability-wise, power level, everything.
Yep. All right, now we're getting into the thick of it here. We're at number 6. This was a card that sticks out to the three of us as one of the first cards we interacted with. Really important card of its time. Got reprinted in Celebrations. I still use it as my GX marker to this day. Or sorry, it's V-Star now. I still use it to this day. Love this card. It is Luxray GL Level X. I will delegate to Kieran first. I'll share my thoughts last. Okay. Go ahead.
So I think Luxray is just iconic for the Lux Chump deck. That deck won Worlds. SP like dominated in that year, its era. But the thing I think that really pushed Luxray over the edge for me was that it was a versatile card. Like, there was decks that didn't play SP Pokemon that played Luxray for its ability. And I think you look at the ability, you're like, okay, like, yeah, Gust is strong, but like, we see that reprinted and that doesn't see play like on Pokemon. But back then, there wasn't guaranteed Gust. Like, Boss didn't exist, Pokemon Catcher didn't exist, like, Reversal existed, but that was a flip. So just guaranteed Gust was so strong in that format. You had decks like Gyarados, for example, like, putting it in their deck for Gust. Like, they were even playing Poketurn just for the Luxray. They'd play like cards like Crobat. So it was not only like a star of its own deck, but it was also a versatile, similar to how I was talking about Darkrai, right? Like, it's like its attack doesn't look that good, but like back then that was fine. It was enough to like knock stuff out because you were just gusting. So to me, it's iconic. It was strong. It was versatile. So that's why it's on the list.
Yeah, we wanted to have like a Level X representation, and Luxray is the standout. The other one that I thought of was Garchomp Level X, because similar to Luxray, it did see a lot of play in other decks. It had a really good attack, good ability. But Luxray, I think, definitely is like the standout from that era. It was a very strong card. A lot of decks did play it. Like even stuff like, I think Jumpluff was playing it. Gyarados, like you said. I'm thinking of like all these different decks in this era, but most decks were playing like Luxray because having Gust back then was very important, and this card was one of the main ways you gusted your opponent. It had a pretty decent attack too. It was a very strong card, had synergy with cards like Poketurn and the tool count. I forget what it was called, but like the SP tool
energy
that
gain?
Made it attack. Yeah, energy gain, attacking for like one energy and stuff. It's a very good card. Definitely one of the standouts of that era. And even then, like, you know, we've talked about this with, like, other abilities, but it's a card that is so iconic that Pokemon have constantly reprinted it over and over again in some way, shape, or form. You know, Lycanroc GX, Umbreon VMAX, like, the iconicness of this card stands out, too. So, yeah, very strong card, and did dominate a lot back in the day. A lot of decks played it. There's a reason why this card was, you know, so hard to get and find.
Yeah, we talked about it last week, about how hard it was to find that card. And I think it only, I think if this was a card in the modern format where people were ripping so many packs, I don't think we'd talk about it as much. I just think like how elusive it was and how much of an advantage it was because it was elusive, I think kind of like paved the way for it a little bit more. Like, I mean, like, we look at it now too, and like we talked about this last week, but we played the 2010 formats and Luxray is not nearly as good as it once was. It is really good.
Yeah,
it is really good. And to me, like, it comes with research, comes with time, comes with deck adaptation, but I also think it comes with access. Like, I think there's a lot to be said about, like, the lack of accessibility that people had to this card back in the day, and when you had it, you were just at that much more of an advantage versus now when it's, like, a $2 celebration card and everybody can proxy it or own it, right? So, unreal card. I think energy gain, having the SP, like, kind of toolbox accessible to it also helped it. I think if Poketurn doesn't exist, that this card doesn't exist as a splashable card for the most part. Just Poketurn's ability to reuse like these gust effects that otherwise didn't exist, as Kieran alluded to, I think makes a massive, massive difference in its like splashability. And I think it was one of those cards like Darkrai that needed the tools around it to be successful, but it had it. So you look at it and you're like, this is one of the best cards of all time.
Yeah, I think. I just want to point out, like, the reason I think we say like it's still tier one if you play 2010, but like the reason it's like going down is like people are making their decks in particular to counter SP. So, like, that's how strong, like, for example, like, I'd argue the best deck in 2010 right now is Gardevoir Gallade with, like, Azelf, Mesprit, Uxie, which makes basics attack cost more. And, like, the reason that engine is playable is because of how good Luxray and SP is, so. It definitely forces, and back then, like, people played, like, Mewtwo Level X, which had, like, Pyroar's ability, like, basics couldn't attack it, so. People were always trying to counter this card in particular, so
it
was
working. The thing is, now it would have a higher play rate now than it did before, right? Just because of the accessibility of it.
Yeah, but I think the best players had the card back then. Like, if you had a Worlds or whatever, no one's not playing SP because they don't have cards.
Mm-hmm. I don't know about that one. I think for the most part you're correct, but I do think some people did get gay kept by this.
Yeah,
because I remember being around. Well, even in Masters, I remember being around and like some guys were just like, I just can't find this card. You couldn't really order them online. At least it was a lot tougher. And like $100 then is not $100 now. I'll tell you that.
It's
I leave the house now. I spend $100, but before it's like $100. Like, damn, like, Yeah. $5 footlongs, that's 20 Subway footlongs, dude. Come on now.
And back then, people weren't buying, you know, packs as much, yeah, right? So it was harder to get, yeah, and you weren't guaranteed to get one in a box. Like nowadays, if you wanted to get a certain card out of a booster box, the chances aren't that bad. It's actually kind of funny. This Luxray, so recently we've been seeing a lot of like Prime Catcher stuff online, how that card's really hard to get and it's like super expensive. It's kind of bringing me back to like the days of Luxray GL Level X, mm-hmm, where it's like everyone's trying to get a Prime Catcher, but they're expensive and hard to find. I haven't pulled one yet, and I've opened up, you know, a booster box, a ton of, you know, pre-release kits and stuff, and I have not gotten one.
Hmm. We need it. We need some sort of like chase back, man. It's been too easy recently.
Yeah, yeah. It's
but no, like in that era, I'm taking 20 cold cut combos over one Luxray. No doubt about it. Like,
yep,
I'm going to Subway 20 times, bro. No brainer, man. I can get chips with that too. Unreal. All right, number five, we have Claydol from Great Encounters. This was one of those like iconic support cards. It was very similar to actually, I shouldn't say that. It's kind of like a cross between Genesect and Shaymin and like Genesect and Uxie. Like, it was a stage one, obviously a little bit slower, but the ability to put two cards back and then draw back up to six was really strong. And I think some people like overlook that when they look back in time at Claydol. But Claydol was a card that almost everything outside the SP engine and Gyarados, I suppose, mostly played Claydol. So, Matt, if you want to give your thoughts on that, I had to stutter for a sec to make sure I got the right guy. But yeah, Matt, go ahead.
yeah. Claydol is probably the best like draw support Pokemon in the game that like sat on your bench. Like, we're not talking about you know, Pokemon you can play from your hand immediately. Like, this is just having something on your bench that did something every single turn. This is easily one of the best ones that did it. Its ability, like you said, it's similar to like Shaymin Uxie. I actually kind of look at it as like a hybrid of like Scovid Bibarel in one. It doesn't do the exact same thing, but it allows you to thin your hand down to draw more cards. So it does remind me a little bit of like Scovid Bibarel nowadays. And back then, a lot of decks did play it. Again, the format was a lot slower back then, so decks were able to, you know, play a couple Claydols down in over the course of two turns, set up their deck. Very good draw ability. If this saw play, like, or if it was legal now, it would easily see a ton of play over Bibarel. I mean, there's a reason why Pokemon kind of have nerfed it a little bit with, like, Octillery and Bibarel, which obviously those cards were designed with Claydol in mind, and they're like, oh, we can't really do that again. We should probably kind of nerf it a little bit. So, yeah, just another card that Pokemon just brought back in Celebrations, and obviously one of the most, in my opinion, one of the most iconic Pokemon from the Diamond and Pearl era.
Yeah. I don't really have much more to add. It's just broken.
Yeah.
And, like, even some SP decks play a 1-1 line sometimes. Like, not often, but
yeah.
Yeah, definitely the best draw, like, vanilla draw Pokemon that, like, exists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Matt nailed it on the head, too. All right, number four. We combined these two into one. We kind of cheated, but I think, I mean, like, if this took up two spots in the top 10 list, it feels bad.
Yeah.
So this makes sense. Uxie with setup and Shaymin with setup. Shaymin EX, sorry, with setup.
Yeah.
Both very, very good cards in their respective times. I would actually, like, struggle to think about which card was better in its time. I think I'm leaning towards Shaymin.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say Shaymin too, yeah.
But it was definitely, there's definitely a conversation to be had, I think.
Yeah,
100%.
They're both fantastic, fantastic cards. Shaman's downside, obviously, is a two prizer versus Uxie's one prizer, and its ability to kind of just go back in the deck whenever with its level X was really good. And I think that's what adds merit to Uxie for me in that conversation. Just that it had the level X that had trade off and had Zenblade, which actually like did pretty relevant damage for that point in time. 60 with a DCE plus an expert belt, you're looking at 80, and then you can recycle yourself back in. So. Overall, great cards. Consistency crutches for a lot of decks. Shaymin enabled some very, very degenerate things.
Very degenerate.
Yeah.
Very degenerate things. Kieran, go ahead.
Yeah, I think XY as an era, like, it was okay, it was fun, but I think it would be so much healthier without Shaymin. I think Shaymin, like, power crept like crazy. Because I think once we saw Crobat, like, they realized their mistake with Shaymin when they limited it to one per turn. Because back then, what you were doing, like, some decks, like, a lot of decks, like, played four Shaymin. Like, I played a deck at Worlds, played four Shaymin. Like, you would literally Shaymin, like, multiple times in one turn. Like, you could draw half your deck turn one very easily. And, like, it was kind of a liability on your bench, but, like, you were going so fast that, like, you were just accelerating the prize share that you didn't even care. Like, you're putting pressure. Like, that's fine. I think it forced, like, a card, it forced Lysander Trump card to get banned. Like, and I'd say Shaymin was more of a problem than that card. It sped up the game to, like, levels I don't know if we had seen before. Toad could use it to get all its disruption cards. Night March was playing it to, like, get, like, turn one, like, 180 attacks. Even decks that were slow would play it. It's just a solid setup Pokemon. Like, if you have a bad hand, it bails you out. And, like, that part of the card is good. bailing you out. But I think it was a little toxic. It just enabled too many like combos. You could pick it up with like Super Scoop Up with AZ. Its attack, yeah. Put it back in. Its attack was really good too. You just put it back in your hand. So I don't know if you're playing against a Toad deck, you're playing against Night March, just put it back, liabilities off your board. So I was broken. Like, in a vacuum, like Uxie is like better because it draws one more card. It's a one prizer. But the combos weren't as broken back in Diamond and Pearl. And bench space was like more of a premium. So every deck pretty much played Uxie and Diamond and Pearl, and it was a fantastic card. And I think Anil alluded to it, like, its attack, put it back in the deck, so you could get rid of it if you wanted to. Its level X, even though we're not supposed to rate it like that, was really good. Its level X took the game-winning knockout at Worlds in 2010. So both of them were fantastic. I just think Shaman was a little bit better just because like it had more toxic cards to work with, in my opinion.
Yeah, Shaman was like a speedier card, and yeah, like back then the meta was a bit slower, so like you wouldn't just spam Uxie every turn and, you know, do like insane toxic combos in one turn like you would back in the X and Y era. I mean, Shaman eventually got banned and expanded because Pokemon realized the card was dirty, and that was probably more because they kept printing like draw support Pokemon, so you could have like Crobat, Dedenne, Shaman in your deck, so you could draw like half your, like most of your deck in one turn. You could honestly deck yourself out at that point. But Shaman EX, definitely just a very good card. I think that Shaman is 100% better than Uxie, but Uxie was such a liable, like a very strong card back in the day. It's like kind of like Tapu Lele was, how every deck played it. It wasn't like an unhealthy card to have, and it sometimes wasn't even bad to have in play, because then of course you did have that level X. And but Shaman was just like turbo draw through so many cards, make these super toxic combos, and yeah, Shaman just a very, very powerful card. And I think Kieran kind of nailed on the head like everything about Shaman.
Yeah, both really good cards. And like the only thing I have to contribute is not even constructive to the cards themselves. It's just Kieran mentioned AZ, and I missed that card because all Toronto slang ends in Oz. You want the Def Oz? You want any of the Oz? Like, we need AZ back, bro. We don't
got
have any.
Turo, but that's not good.
Yo, Anil, no man, Indian man, it's AZ.
It's AZ, bro. It's AZ, the bro. Def Oz. It's not the Def whatever.
Oz.
Okay.
Wait, AZ. Oz. It's still Oz.
It's still Oz. Yo, but yo, if anybody's not from Toronto and you don't understand this, just Google Def Oz, okay? Google Def Oz. DefFaz. It's Toronto slang. It is so stupid. But I think it originated from AZ, the Pokemon card, right? That's for sure.
That's definitely where Toronto slang came from.
Yeah, obviously. All Toronto slang is derived off
Pokemon. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. So that's the only input I have for this conversation.
Toronto accent.
Toronto slang is stupid. I hope none of you speak it. Anyways, in third, this was actually my original number one until I started using my brain again. We have Arceus Dialga Palkia GX, widely known as the most degenerate Pokemon card in recent history. I say recent because, yeah. One of the number ones is more degenerate than this, but very degenerate card. Thankfully, COVID stopped it. The only thing positive thing to come out of COVID was stopping ADP, in my opinion.
No, and remote work. That's why
stimulus
I'm
checks.
This
I guess it
right
wasn't
now.
That bad. Yeah, I guess it wasn't that bad. It's the only reason Kieran could record at 12:29 on a Tuesday. yeah, good card overall. I mean, I don't think there's a whole lot to say about it, but. Take the stage, whoever wants, whoever is passionate about ADP.
I get this. Yeah. So, yeah, ADP, infamous card, arguably the most hated card in Pokemon history. It's crazy. I forget what it was, but it was like a couple months ago. I was doing like a video talking about ADP, or it's like I was streaming or something. And I had people in the chat asking what ADP did. I don't know. I just find that crazy that people don't know what this card does. But it definitely was one of the most warping cards we've ever seen, arguably the most game warping card we've ever seen, to be honest with you. It's got the most ridiculous set of attacks. It's got an energy acceleration attack, and it has one of the most broken attacks ever with Altered Creation, being able to immediately do 30 more damage the entire game and take an extra prize is so dumb. And it's not even hard to power up. I mean, back when ADP first came out, it actually wasn't that, you know, playable. It was good with like Keldeo and stuff, but it was slower. It wasn't as dominant. And then Zacian V came out alongside Metal Saucer Energy Switch. And next thing you know, ADP is everywhere. It is such a good card. It surprisingly never got banned, which, I mean, even looking back, man, how did this card not get banned? But yeah, just such a strong card. It doesn't have a weakness either. It's got 280 HP. Like, it was so hard to KO. And any deck that, you know, was weak to like the effect of taking extra prize card, like, barely was able to compete against ADP, because half the time they're just not knocking this thing out in time, and there was really no counter to it. This was such a dominant card. Pokemon never printed an ADP counter. The closest thing we have is Pokemon Ranger, but that didn't exist back then in the format. So the closest thing we had was like playing Crushing Hammer, which just completely then changed the metagame because every deck was playing it and it was so good against other archetypes. It's such a stupid card. Yeah, easily just one of the worst eras of the TCG. Maybe that could be another video for another time. Top 10 best eras of the game or something. But yeah, ADP... arguably, like, I mean, looking at it, it probably should be the best card of all time because of its attacks, but we didn't have it at number one, but definitely it's an easy top three for me.
Yeah,
I can see the steam going off Matt's head right now.
Ignite the passion inside you, baby. I hated this card so much.
I think, yeah, like, and you know, I didn't really play during COVID. Like, Matt, like, no. Obviously, like, you did too. So you had
I had to do rogue decks in a meta where this card was everywhere, dude. So
yeah.
Bad.
Yeah, actually, that's tough. Yeah.
So I think the one thing, like, Matt just alluded to is, so let me say this. So normally when a card is good, not just in Pokemon, any card game, it's because it breaks the rules of the game. So to give an example, like, Charizard EX in Standard, like, you break the one energy attachment per turn rule. Like, Baxcalibur does the same thing, for example. So I think taking prizes is, like, the core rule of the Pokemon TCG. And, like, taking an additional one is just, like, crazy. Like, Iron Hands is a good card. But, like, that's, like, only 120, 4 energy. Like, Lugia EX used to have, like, the ability to take more. But, like, there was such a high, like, cost to having to do that. The cost for this was, like, nothing. Like, you need 2 energy. Like, and I think, like, what Matt was saying, like, he couldn't play his rogue decks was it completely choked out single prize decks from the meta. Like, the reason single prize decks, like, work is because they trade up. Like, you're trading one prize for 2 prizers. Or you trade 2 1 prizers for 1 2 prizer. And ADP just made it so instead of a one prize deck, like forcing everyone to take 6 knockouts, ADP just had to take 3 knockouts. And against any deck that played 2 prize Pokemon, like ADP had to take 2 knockouts. So it just accelerated the game, which to me is horrible. Like Pokemon, like I hate games of Pokemon that are like too quick. Because the less turns you have, the less plays are being made, less interactions, less opportunity for mistakes to happen, just less opportunity for skill to be expressed. And this card did that. Like, if we made a list of worst design cards of all time, like, it's not even close. Like, this card is, like, the worst design card. I think the only reason I wouldn't put this number one is it actually wasn't, like, super broken when it came out. It was, like, still tier one. But it needed, like, a card that, like, could just one-shot everything to go with it. So as long
and
as...
And we got Zacian.
Yeah, then we got Zacian. As long as there's something in the format that one-shots everything that's easy to, like, pair with it, like, this card's too good. So... Yeah, like, its attack, also, like, I don't know why it needed to do an extra 30 damage, too. Like, that part was, like, unnecessary. Like, I guess, like, that's just how tag teams work. They had 2 effects, but, like, I don't know.
They made the effect a little too good. Yeah, they cooked a little too hard with this one.
Like, legit, I hated tag teams so much, like, I legitimately, like, took a break from Pokemon, like, during that era. Because I'm like, this is just so dumb. Like, this is not, like, the Pokemon that I love. Like, it was, like, legit. Like, I was getting, like, so tilted playing those, like, that format. I'm like, this is just not fun. So
what happened to the game I
exactly what happened loved? To the game I love, man. So
what happened
this is like we put it on the list out of respect, but I think all three of us like hate this card. I think most people hate this card, to be honest.
I hate this card. The one thing that I found fun about it was before, I guess even before this card got broken, I was making like funny expanded decks where I was playing ADP with like random stuff. Like I did an ADP Night March video, which I thought was kind of cool because being able to like push the extra 30 barrier was actually kind of cool. But outside of that, yeah, this card sucked. Bad for the game. Ruined the format. Such a terribly designed card. Probably the best, like, tag team Pokemon. I mean, obviously, there's other ones we could have mentioned, like Mewtwo or Pikarom. But, ADP, without a doubt, like, has to take the cake.
Yeah, I'm not as passionate as you guys about this. This card was just stupid. That's all I really have to say about it. Like, it's just dumb. Yeah. It's fine. Like, it'll never happen again, I hope. Maybe another 20 years when the game designers, like, retire and you guys come in and want to just... throw everything on its head. So we'll see.
ADP part 2.
Yeah, please no, I'm quitting. All right, we're up to the top. Well, that was our third. We're into the top 2 now. And so the way this is working, I don't think we explained this, but our number one, we all had different number ones. So if you're thinking of 3 very distinct cards you haven't seen on this list yet, that is why. We're going to reveal them at number one. We all have our own choices. At number 2, though, is Gardevoir from Secret Wonders with Telepass. This was, I mean... You think about it, you're looking at the card right now, you just look at that ability, you're like, how does this exist? This is just insane.
So good.
And then you combine that with an ability lock and a level X that's also quite good, and the ability to evolve into a Gallade that can one-shot anything, and you just think about, like, this card is insane. Maybe in a different era, it's a little different, but it had all the tools to succeed. So, Kieran, I know this was your recommendation, take us away.
Yeah, so I think you hit the nail on the head. It's debatably the best ability of all time. I mean, like, supporters are core of the game. Like, you need supporters to set up, you need supporters to disrupt, like, all that stuff. And just having the ability to use your opponents is crazy. Like, you, not only do you use theirs, but, like, you get to use two a turn. Like, you can still use yours. And it also forces... I love cards that force you to play differently. So, like, a lot of times back then, like, people wouldn't play certain supporters because they didn't want Gardevoir to use it. So, for example, like, if your deck played Judge, like, it was very risky to play that card because then you're letting your opponent, like, disrupt you every single turn the rest of the game. So that's super strong. And then its attack was also, like, insane. So... we've already talked about Garbodor. Like, ability lock is just huge. Like, most of the cards in this list, like, almost every deck that's meta in Pokemon, like, relies on abilities one way or the other. So just having the option to shut it off, and there was no counter to it. Like, if you got Psychic locked, like, there wasn't a Pokemon that, like, or a card that could, like, undo the lock. So it was just, like, you could basically, from the turn you get Gardevoir set up, like, you could have your opponent, like, locked from abilities, like, the entire game. And then I think also, just talking about dominance, like, I think Robbie Weedman pointed this out for us in the comments last week, was in 2008, like, Gardevoir Gallade won 11 of 15 North American regionals, and it won Worlds, and it won, like, four nationals. So, I mean, the card in its time was just, like, super dominant. And then 2 years later in 2010, like, it became Tier 1 again. And I think it's just, like, it just goes to show, like, how strong of an effect both of the things, like, the ability and the attack were. Like, this, to me, like, I was considering this for number one. And I think it's completely fair to put this card number one as well.
Yeah, just really good card. Gardevoir has had so many good cards, and this one is, like, easily the best.
Yeah, it's a cool Pokemon. I think people really like the Pokemon. And, like, the concept of, like, adding Gallade was pretty cool. So a lot of people are like, hey, I can do multiple things. There was also the Gardevoir deck from 2005, 2006. That was very, very good. The Delta Species one.
The Imprisoned.
Imprisoned?
Yeah. That's what it was,
That's what it was called, right?
The ability, right? So. You put the imprisoned counters.
Yep.
And, like, yeah. It blocks
and
abilities.
And that got reprinted in Celebrations, too, I think. So, yeah.
Those are the ones I'm using for my deck that I have built, bro. I'm not buying the real ones. It's crazy.
Yeah.
it was that combined with the Delta Species one. The, like, actual from the set Delta Species.
And there's the...
Both very good.
Honestly,
cards.
Like, Gardevoir... Like, I know people have done videos on this before. I think, like, Lake of Rage has done one before. But, like, the best, like, Pokemon of all time, like, if you count all their cards, like, I think it's Gardevoir. Like, not even close. Like,
yeah, it's not even close.
Like,
for
whatever reason, Pokemon just, like, loves giving Gardevoir good cards. Like, there's... I can only count, like, on my, like a few Gardevoir cards that, like, weren't that good. Like...
Yeah, I'm looking right now on, like, Pokemon cards. I like all the Gardevoir cards. It's like, I'm just going through. I'm like, yep, that was good. 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 Like, every iteration we've seen a Gardevoir have been good.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
I think Black and White is the only era where Gardevoir wasn't good. And I remember one guy got top 8 with, like, the Gardevoir that makes your energy count as 2.
It wasn't that bad with Mewtwo. It wasn't even bad.
Yeah.
It was, like, tier 3.
It wasn't great,
but
it wasn't bad. Still, yeah. And then we got Gardevoir EX and then Mega Gardevoir, and then Gardevoir was, like, back into the meta.
Yeah. It kind of makes sense to me, though, when I think of it, like, from, like, a grand perspective. Like, what is a Pokemon that you think would make the most sense to make overpowered? So you think about, like, Pokemon Company's agenda, right? Like, they want to hit as many different, like, groups as they can, right? Like, Gardevoir is a very loved Pokemon all around. Like, not within, like, males 25 and over, but within, like, everybody everywhere. And, like, most of the demographic of Pokemon now is, like, males within that age. So this is a great card to appeal to other groups and stuff like that, too. So people like Gardevoir.
Canada loves their Guardies, you know? The GK
loves
their
Gardevoir.
Yeah.
Kids love Gardevoir. Everyone loves Gardevoir. It's a good card to make. I think another card that sticks out to me is something that has been good for a long time is Garchomp.
Yep.
Garchomp's just had a lot of good cards as well.
Garchomp, Zoroark, Dragonite,
obviously, Sableye,
obviously Charizard
Mew,
has been underpowered until...
Mew, Mewtwo. I mean, one thing I did want to actually point out, what is Gardevoir the Pokemon that has won the most world championships?
Well, like, as a the core of the deck, or?
Just, like, the Pokemon in general. Like, if you look at every Worlds, has Gardevoir itself won the most Worlds?
Well, it's only won, 2008? And it's won 2017? Is it won another
one? It almost won last year. But that's an interesting, like, fact. What Pokemon has won the most world championships?
I asked Anil, like, that on one of our podcasts, but only in the modern era.
What was the answer again? It was Lele?
It was Lele, that was included.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah,
that makes sense, actually.
True.
Yeah, I think Mewtwo's... Well,
it's
Mewtwo's
Mew,
really
I think.
Good
is
overall,
the, I think Mew's the answer.
To what?
Okay,
That's like a Pokemon that's been the most world-winning decks.
That makes sense.
That's fair.
Okay,
yeah.
Well,
it is Mew, so...
This works quite well into our next point. So here's number one, okay? And our number ones are all different. And so Kieran's number one was not on either of our lists, just... I mean, like... the criteria thing, I think, just the way we interpreted the criteria, all of us. Mine and Matt's were on both of our top 10 list. And just to be different, we put it at one to make this interesting. So, yeah. Okay, Matt, why don't you start with yours then?
Okay, so my number one was Zoark GX. I think this card is basically the epitome of like everything a good Pokemon card is. It's got a, it had a good type, a good attack, a good ability. It was its own engine. It was a very, very like strong card. And not only was it, you know, strong, it just like it was the metagame. There were so many different Zoark decks. The format was kind of revolved around it. Zoark GX is one of the best cards ever designed, I think, in just any card game, to be honest. Like, it's just such a strong and versatile card. There were so many different ways to play it. You had other Zoarks you could play it with. Like, you had like Zoark Mindjack, you had Zoark Break, so you had all this different like versatility around it. Of course, you did have the different versions of the deck, like Galisapod or Lycanroc or Oranguru and Garbodor, stuff like that. Zoark, to me, is the best Pokemon card of all time. Like, you could debate, like, okay, well, this card would not see play today. And it eventually did get power kept out of the format a little bit once we got to, like, the meat of the tag team meta. But the card still, in my opinion, is just one of the best cards we've ever seen. It's such a strong card. It caused games to not only, like, it was such a good card that it didn't ruin the game. Like, something like ADP or Anil's number one, they debatably ruined the game. But with, like, Zoark GX, it didn't ruin the game. If anything, it made the game better. Because it, like, even though the game was kind of almost, like, warped around Zoark a little bit, it allowed for, like, longer games, more interactive games, more skill expression games. Like, it just, it made the format better, in my opinion. And it just, like, kept the Sun and Moon, like, evolving era alive. Because we didn't get to Big Basics until we got to, like, Team Up and stuff.
Yep.
But, yeah, Zoark definitely, in my opinion, is the standout Pokemon of all time. It's such an iconic Pokemon card, too, in my opinion. I think that also adds to it. I don't know how it didn't get a card in Celebrations, to be honest, but, yeah.
No idea.
Yeah, I agree with Matt pretty much here. I think we talked about this a bit last week, but it's just a well-designed card. Like, it felt very fair to play against. And I love cards that are versatile. So I think any Pokemon that usually has, like, colorless attacks, like, you can play any type with them. That's like Matt said, like, you had, like, the Glycopod, you had Lycanroc, Garbodor, like, all that stuff. So it was just, like, from when it got printed to, honestly, until it rotated, like, it was just super strong.
It saw play. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it only got to play one world championship, and it won the one it got to play. So even when tag teams first came out, when Pikarom came out and the Reshiram, or I don't know if Reshiram came out in time, but I remember that NAIC, like, it's still like one, I think. So
Reshiram was out.
Yeah, so the, it's just like it's still fought, yeah, like with the tag teams. And if it was legal for worlds that year, I'm sure it would have found a way to compete as well. So no, just a super probably solid card. It was in my top 10 for sure. And I think it's definitely worthy of number one.
Yeah, you can take us through your number one pick.
Okay, so we talked about this last week, I think. But my number one was Slowking from Neo Genesis. So I think Anil and Matt didn't put it on because it was mistranslated. But actually, shout out again to Robbie Weedman. He found an article where the North American people from Wizards of the Coast, they actually mistranslated the card on purpose. And I think that might be the only instance we've ever seen of a card where they change it from the Japanese release. So I think they said they didn't like how good items were, so they wanted it to be like this. Definitely a mistake on their part. Items were broken. But to me, this card just like completely warped how Pokemon was played. Just full disclosure, I didn't play back then, but just from reading articles, talking to people who played back then. Just even if you play Pokemon now, like, items are, like, basically half of your deck. They're core to every Pokemon deck strategy. And forcing your opponent to have a 50% chance to, like, just not play an item is insane. And then Slowking, like, stacked. So, like, I think if this card got reprinted in any era, like, it would see play. But back then, like, you could literally just play, like, if you got three Slowkings into play, your opponent had, like, a 12.5% chance of playing an item. Like, that's just, like, insane to me. It could sit on the bench. Back then, like, Gust wasn't as prevalent, like, it wasn't easy to knock out, and if you wanted to knock it out, you'd have to flip through, like, three Slowkings to knock one out. So, I just think it was very toxic. This card did win Worlds with Sneasel. Sneasel was another card I think we could put in honorable mentions. So it had success in its era, and it eventually got banned because it was too good after a couple years. So to me, just broken card, completely changed how Pokemon was played. And it eventually had success at tournaments, and then it eventually got banned. So, I don't know, to me, this is just the strongest card, like, ever, for bad reasons, but to me, it's number one.
Yeah, makes sense to me, man. Like,
yeah,
the card gets banned, you know it's that good. Like, Not much else to say about that one. I'll give you guys my number one. So my number one is Mewtwo EX from Next Destinies. And we've touched on this. It power crept the game in ways that we have never seen before. And I think to this date, like, the only time I can recall something as stark is, like, the tag team era, maybe. Yeah. And, like, even that, like, not even. So what stuck out to me over the other ones and why this is my number one, and, like, actually, when I think about it, it truly is my number one, is its interaction with itself. So, like, the way it interacts with itself is it's its own best counter, right? So what happens is the usage of this card snowballs. So because this is its own best counter, everyone else is playing it to counter the Mewtwo's, and then you're countering the counter and whatever. And so this card snowballs, and it makes it A, very iconic, B, very well widely played, and C, very splashable. So those three things put together were the reason why this sticks out to me over something like Darkrai EX, for example, where, like, its counter is Terrakion, right? Like, it's not, like, countering itself. There is no, like, snowball. Like, it's more of, like, a triangle kind of interaction. Whereas this was just, like, mind-blowingly crazy. Like, when DCE got reprinted in Next Destinies with Mewtwo, like, on paper, it looks like, okay, I'm doing 40 damage. All right, whatever. But then people started playing it, and I think the hype was there from day one, for sure. It was $70 on release, but people started playing it, and you start to realize, like, how many ways you can really, like, multiply this and make it bigger over and over. And the same similar kind of thing got reprinted with Evil Tall EX later on. But just the interactions Mewtwo had with itself, and the way that it was splashable within everything, and how we went from, like, 130 HP single prizes to 170 HP two prizes in one format, or sorry, in one set even, was remarkable. And I think to this day, it's still, when I think about Pokemon, and maybe this is, I mean, there's so much nostalgia associated with this game. Like, when you ask anybody what their favorite Pokemon card was, like, it's almost always what you pulled first or what you played first, something like that. And I think this is definitely one of those for me, but, like, when I was first starting to get into the game seriously, Mewtwo was, like, the card. Like, obviously, we were playing around with Luxray, with, like, those Diamond Pearl sets, but, like, when you start taking the game seriously and you start to actually care, like, Mewtwo was the card. And like, it came out in a tin, it got reprinted in Legendary Treasures, it got reprinted in Celebrations. Like, this was the card, and to this day, I think, like, this is the one that really sticks out to me. It's the most iconic of all time, at least for me.
Yeah, I think the thing you pointed out, and people check us in the comments if we're wrong, but I do think that Mewtwo EX was, like, the biggest power creep in the game's history.
I agree.
And I think you could argue, like, if you point to where, not the Pokemon went, like, downhill, but where they, like, changed their philosophy of how, like, it was black and white, but I think Mewtwo was especially where the philosophy of how they designed the game changed. I think Mewtwo represented where they kind of decided they wanted evolution decks to kind of, like, exit the meta. Because I think my one biggest criticism with the black and white era is that, like, basic decks, like, dominated that meta. And I think Mewtwo was the big thing that started that. Like, right before it, we had, like, a Noble Victory format. Like, evolution decks were all tier one. Like, I think it's a great format. I love playing that format.
Good format, yeah.
Mewtwo basically was played in, like, every single deck. Like, you had to play Mewtwo. And, like, even if your deck, like, wasn't a Mewtwo strategy, like, you had to put Mewtwo in. Because, like Anil said, like, the best way to counter Mewtwo is just to have your own Mewtwo. Actually, I had a nice debate with Jake Earhart on Twitter about this, friend of the pod. Like, he considered Mewtwo, like, a deck, because, like, I said I don't really consider it a deck because, like, every deck plays it and it's not the core strategy. But, like, honestly, you could argue that that format when it came out was every deck was just Mewtwo deck plus partner to, like, enable Mewtwo. So the most popular deck back then was Electric. It has the same ability as Flaffy. And it was literally just because you could just easily keep powering up Mewtwos. Then there was a deck called Celebi Mewtwo with Tornadus, where, like, Celebi would just accelerate energy to your Mewtwo. And then when Darkrai EX came out, it's a dark type. They're like, oh, we'll print this card to counter Mewtwo. But then everyone just waited, and they're like, oh, wait, the best partner for Darkrai is Mewtwo. Mm-hmm. It was just every deck played Mewtwo. Like it's just like you had to play this card. Like, it was just crazy. And, like,
Mewtwo the TCG, pretty much.
Yeah, like, it was just like you had to, and then games would devolve that, like, you would, like, okay, the first person plays Mewtwo, and it was called, you would initiate the Mewtwo War. And then, like,
yeah, Mewtwo War, yeah.
Your opponent would attack with Mewtwo. And then, all right, now you have to attack with Mewtwo again to knock out the Mewtwo. And then they have to knock out your Mewtwo. It was just so dumb. And, like Anil said, like, when the card came out, it was expensive. So if you played three Mewtwo and your opponent played two, like, you just win. Because you win the Mewtwo War. So, now this card was just insane. Like, on the surface, it doesn't look crazy. Like its attack has been printed, like, many times, like, since then. But back then, it was, like, so efficient. Just a double colorless energy to do, like, it usually was, like, at least, like, 100 damage if, like, your opponent, like, had, like, energies on them. And, like, other decks back then, like, had to work to do that much damage. Like, you'd have to evolve to a stage two, like, get, like, a bunch of energy into play. So it just completely power crept the numbers. And then Darkrai took it to a whole another level. But
yeah.
I also think there's merit to saying that, like, black and white at the start was like the biggest power creep. You went from like these evolved like 120 HP primes to like basic Zekrom and Reshiram. But the writing was kind of on the wall at that point, right? Like you see that and you're like, okay, this game is changing a little bit. But Mewtwo to me, absolutely iconic. Matt, I don't know if you had anything to add to that.
Mewtwo is like the first basic that was a two prizer, which was a big deal. Because ever since that, we've just been constantly getting like two prize basic Pokemon. And they always end up being really, really broken. And Mewtwo was kind of patient zero for that. And like you said, we did have Zekrom and like Reshiram before that, which were, at the time, pretty big basics that were very powerful because they were harder to KO. But like, yeah, Mewtwo just took it to a whole nother level because it's not only a really broken card with a lot of broken like combos, but it also then had access to like a ton of HP and it gave up two prizes. So it sped up the game a lot more because it's giving up more prizes. And then it kind of snowballed where Pokemon were like, okay, we just got to keep printing these big basic EX Pokemon to kind of keep the game, you know, not from just being Mewtwo, the TCG. They made Darkrai, and then obviously we got like Keldeo, Rayquaza, the Team Plasma stuff, Genesect, stuff like that, and Yveltal eventually. So Mewtwo just kind of snowballed, I think, to where we are today. But yeah, it is crazy because like every other EX in Next Destinies was like not that good, except for like maybe Zekrom EX, and then Mewtwo just was like clearly like the best card in the set. But yeah, Mewtwo, it's essentially one of the most revolutionizing Pokemon cards of all time, where it was the first big basic two prizer, and we've been getting them ever since.
Well, that concludes this. That concludes another top 10. We've been taking everyone through a ride through Pokemon history last few weeks.
Been fun.
Been a blast doing it. We've learned a lot, and I'm hoping everyone else learned a lot too. If you haven't checked the previous two videos out, we suggest you go do that. They were both very, very interesting and somewhat difficult to make. This one was by far the hardest, and we've said it every single week that it just gets harder and harder. It's tough to contrast these things, but it's fun. It's fun to do it, and it's fun to kind of take everyone through a walk. We're kind of undecided on what next week's episode is going to be. We're going to be in BC, Karen and I, so we might do a little IRL episode. Might be some fun out there. But yeah, if you're new here, please click that subscribe button. We noticed that a lot of people who kind of come to us are off the recommendations tab. So if you like what you heard, please do consider hitting the subscribe button. But thank you to everybody for being here. This is a long-ass episode. We've been here for a minute. If anybody sees us at the Vancouver Regionals this weekend, come say hi. We love saying hi to everybody, meeting everyone. It's still kind of new to us, so we're really enjoying it. Karen, do you have anything to add before we hop off?
Yeah, if you've been kind of enjoying like this old school type stuff, like I have some resources. So Jason Kaczynski, like he was in our top 10 videos, like the GOAT, like he has a great blog where he goes through every era of the Pokemon TCG up until X and Y. So when I research for these videos, like I use him as a resource a lot. There's another great website called PTCG Legends. It's run by Alex Wilson, active member of the community, two-time regional champion. That's great. There's other websites like PTCG Archive. There's like Facebook groups called Snowpoint Temple. Fellow Canadian Drew Allen has a YouTube channel called Snowpoint Cast. So there's tons of resources if you want to learn more about these old decks. If you want to play old format, I recommend this website called TCG1. It's a free simulator some people coded. It's fantastic. They have a Patreon if you want to check that out to help them keep developing. Tons of really cool resources. I'll put them all in the description where you guys can check it out if you want to keep learning about the history of the game.
A lot of cool stuff out there. And building these decks is a lot of fun, too. If you build them in real life, you find the chase to get all the cards really fun. And it's really rewarding if you have people to play with IRL. We definitely recommend it. Matt, we'll give you a little... You have the floor here. Plug yourself. Plug everything.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on once again. These episodes are a lot of fun to make. They're a lot of fun to, you know, compile the list together. And I don't know, I'm just really passionate about the game. So I just really enjoy just coming up with these lists and, you know, these videos and all that stuff. So thank you once again for having me on the episode. I'm not going to be in Vancouver. I will be at home at, like, streaming, making content on the new set. But I am going to hopefully be watching you guys on stream. Hopefully when you guys get on stream at some point. Thank you for having me on once again. As always, you can check out my YouTube channel, Little Dark Fury, or you can check out my second channel, LDF Pokemon TCG.
Yeah, it's our honor to have ADP's number one enjoyer on the pod. It was ADP's fun seeing the steam fan hop off your head there. You were into it.
Bro, I was looking like Eustace Bag, bro.
Duh, you were human. That was good, man. Anyways, thank you everybody for being here. Have a great week. We'll see y'all next week.
Yep, later.
Peace out. Later.